You're listening to a download from the outdoorstation.co.uk. Number 461.
Hello and welcome back to the Outdoor Station and part three of the short series recorded at the photography show at the NEC in March 2018. If you've listened to the previous two episodes, you'll know that my mission this year was to speak with the major camera brands and explore their suggestions as to the ideal camera for outdoor enthusiasts. The good, better, best, if you will. And in this podcast, we will hear from Nikon UK and Fujifilm. I was helped at the show by Mr. Andy Howell, and if you're a lover of travel and photography in exotic locations, you'll be interested in his chat with Travel Photography Adventures. He also visited the Lumo Power Stand to get details of a very useful light meter and colour temperature accessory for your iPhone. Of course, all the links and images to everything we discuss can be found over on theoutdoorstation.co.uk. But first, let's dive headfirst into my conversation with Tim Carter, Senior Product Manager at Nikon UK.
So what we have here is the Nikon W300. It's the latest in our tough range of compact cameras. It's rated as waterproof down to 30 metres and shockproof to 2.4 metres. So very capable, very tough, great for use in any situation. It's got an internal zoom so that you can zoom in an optical zoom. Records 4K video, has built-in Bluetooth and Wi-Fi for using with our SnapBridge app. So that you can control the camera and download the images to your phone.
Okay, so talking practically, for somebody who takes this out into the wild, as it were, they can control the phone from a distance, so if they want to do selfies of themselves, they can shoot that way.
Yep.
As you say, it's got the video aspect as well. Because it's a waterproof and a tough camera, I presume there's no flip-out screen and no external sort of sockets.
No, absolutely. The whole thing, all the sockets are sealed away inside a very tight and secure waterproof housing. The screen is, yeah, as it is, yeah.
And I presume, are these doing time-lapse now as well as videos?
Not time-lapse with this one, but you can shoot 4K video, yeah.
Okay, and what sort of price point are we looking at for that?
So this is probably around sort of £399 in the UK, yeah.
What's the jump now between that and the next one you would talk about?
So the second product we're going to talk about, the Nikon D5600, is an SLR. So it's a single lens reflex camera, much better image quality with lenses, but it's a small and lightweight body. It's very ergonomic, so it's got a nice deep grip, which means you can carry it about all day and you're not going to get a tired hand. And it's got some really good features packed in, things like built-in camera time lapse, for good image quality, basically.
One thing I forgot to mention about ask you about the tough camera is, what about recharging of batteries? Because that's pretty important, really, for people out several days at a time.
Yeah, so the W300, you can charge by USB, but obviously you do have to open up the camera to the elements to plug it in. But you can charge these from an external battery pack, like a phone bank type thing, yeah.
Excellent, okay. And is that the same for the 5600 as well?
No, the 5600, you do need to charge the battery remotely. However, being an SLR camera, it doesn't use much battery at all, so you could easily go shooting for like 2-3 days out in the wild and you probably wouldn't have to recharge the camera.
No, I know you class that one as more of an entry-level DSLR, and as such it doesn't have features like waterproof, but obviously most cameras are water resistant up to a certain yeah. element. What about the other features that would be of interest to people, again, shooting video or shooting selfies? Is the screen flip out, external sockets and that type of thing?
Yeah, so on the 5600 the screen flips right out and turns around, so it is great if you do want to shoot yourself from a selfie point of view or any kind of video where you're in, you can see what you're doing there. It's also got an external mic socket, so you can plug in a microphone if you need to as well.
And what about the focusing on the introduction cameras? Is it fairly rapid focusing?
Absolutely. So the real advantage of a DSLR is really fast and crisp autofocus. So built in with our new AFP lenses that are very quiet for focusing. What that means is they're great for video. You can't hear the lens on the videos, which is really good. But they're also very quick autofocus. Yeah.
Okay, and what's the price point on that one?
The 5600 be around £700 with a lens, and it normally comes with an 18 to 55 lens, so around £700 in the UK.
Okay, so what's the difference between that and the D500 now, moving further up?
Sure. So the D500 is our top of the range crop sensor camera, okay? What that means is it benefits from very good ruggedness and weather sealing. So it's the sort of camera that you can use out and about in the rain, in the wet. It's not waterproof, you can't put it underwater, but it can take a huge amount of abuse because the body is sealed really well against all the elements and things like dust and moisture.
And is that the same for the lens as well?
The lenses are weather sealed to an extent, but it very much depends on what level of lenses you're buying at, basically. If you're buying an equivalent lens, maybe something like a 16 to 80 will be a good lens to go with the D500 that has some aspects of weather sealing built into it as well. I mean, I wouldn't have any problem in using that out in the rain, you know, as long as it doesn't get too wet, basically.
Okay, and presumably, again, it's got microphone input and HDMI, etc.
Yep, absolutely. That's all included as well, yeah.
Okay, and the price point on the 500 before we come back to a couple of other things?
Yeah, so the D500 price point, probably around £1,700 in the UK, around there, yeah.
Okay, so what are we looking at as regards megapixels then across all three products?
So the W300 is a 16 megapixel camera.
And does that shoot RAW as well?
No, it doesn't shoot RAW. Okay. 5600 is 24 megapixels and the D500 is 20 megapixels. And you might wonder why the higher range D500 has less megapixels. The main reason on that is a very good low light camera. So what we've done is we've reduced the number of pixels on the sensor. That makes the pixels physically bigger and they allow more light in, and therefore it performs much better in low light situations.
But obviously both that and the 5600 shoot RAW as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
And as regards the D500, remote charging?
No, you can't remote charge the D500, but again, being an SLR, the battery life is fantastic. So you can, you know, again, shoot two, three days without any kind of problem and, you know, without needing to top up the battery.
Well, back onto the holiday theme, a little bit different. I'm with Mark Seymour now, who is the owner of Travel Photography Adventures. Now, on your stand, Mark, you've got some stunning photographs of all kinds of different kind of trips to maybe quite a range of different destinations, don't you, here? So, you know, we've seen people going to the Arctic and stuff like that, and safaris, but these are really up my street. These are photographs that feature on people. And I always think that the landscape is fine, but it's always much more interesting if there's somebody in it. So tell us a bit about the company, the philosophy, and what you offer.
So Travel Photography Adventures was set up by myself and my partner, Andy Mack. And it was set up to do photography trips around the world, but with the ethos of them being off the beaten track. So if we take you to India, we won't be taking you to Taj Mahal. We'll be taking you somewhere that you look twice at going, or you certainly wouldn't find in a travel brochure. We've got trips all around the world this year, from Istanbul, Hanoi, Jodhpur, Kolkata, Yangon, Havana and Sicily. We've actually just come back from Yangon, Myanmar, and we had a fantastic time. And I'll just tell you in 10 seconds a bit about the trip. We flew into Yangon and then we took a prop plane all the way to Miek. And then at Miek we were greeted by customs. That was a small table. He asked for our passports and then took a picture of all our passports with his iPhone. And then we worked our way back from Miek via Dewi, Yi, and Malor Mine back to Yangon over the next 14 days, staying at various different towns, photographing the local people. And It's about having a great photography experience, a great adventure, going off the beaten track and learning street photography techniques like shooting through, mirroring, heads in spaces, layering and that sort of thing. But if you'd like to find out more, come on our website, travelphotographyadventures.com.
Right. Now, this getting off the beaten track gets really interesting, I think, because you're not staying in premier inns and things like that. And you mentioned street photography there and a lot of the photographs on display here, which no doubt you'll see on the website, are very much street photography. But while it's a very rewarding thing to do, it's quite intimidating for somebody starting off, isn't it, to know just how to do that. So the techniques of, as well as the destination, are pretty critical, I guess.
Sure. I mean, it's the biggest thing that people come up to us at the beginning and say, you know, they want to conquer their fears about street photography, or they're frightened to go up to people. But, you know, generally, everyone's friendly, and if you approach people in the right way, it's never really a problem. And, you know, we one of the things we set out at the beginning of the course is that, you know, what we're going to try and teach you, or what we're going to try and get you to overcome. And a lot of people come on the course with, you know, 24 to 70 zoom lens or something a bit longer because they don't want to be obtrusive. But
actually, that's more intrusive, isn't it, really?
Absolutely. The longer lens, because you think, what's that person over there trying to do? But if you actually go and approach people and you just say hello to them in their native language, like, you know, namaste, etc., people will respond to that. And then you can stay with it and you can ask them some basic questions, and it may be in pidgin English, but, you know, people respect that, and then they let you into their space. And once they've let you into their space, you can then get the great photographs. So one of the things we try and encourage people is, rather than just taking a picture then walking off, is stay with that moment and immerse yourself in their life, or and try and tell their story, and you'll get some amazing pictures, I promise you.
Yeah, I've only ever had two problems in years and years of doing it. One was a guy who I thought was complaining when I was in Hong Kong. Actually, he wasn't. He wanted to show me something that he thought was a nicer thing to photograph. And the other one was a woman making traditional flatbreads. And actually, she didn't mind me taking photographs, but I hadn't asked, you know, and it's that kind of thing. So let's get back down to the basics. How long are your holidays, Mark?
The holidays go from either a week or 2 weeks. Most people, we'd say, get there at least a day or two early, just in case there's flight delays, or, you know, for things like jet lag, and just so you can sort of immerse yourself in the culture and, you know, not be sort of shocked with the changing culture from coming from a European town to somewhere like India, where it's quite full on with the traffic and the people and the noise, etc. So typically a week. But some of them are 2 weeks, the more immersive ones.
And a few days beforehand, I guess, allows you to relax as well if you're going to go into that street setting. And how big are the groups?
One of the things we really major on is that the groups are small, because we can't give great tuition if there's a big group of 10 or more. So we make sure our groups are 6-7 people, absolute maximum.
So lots of opportunity for individual support and group support as well, I guess.
Absolutely. In fact, what we do, because we have a mixture of people on there, from high professional photographers to keen amateurs, is we split people up into sort of buddy groups of two each day. And I make sure I go with each buddy group every day, at least once or twice. And that way is we get no little clicky groups, and everyone gets the benefits of everyone else's experience. And it just gives, it creates a great group experience and adds to that adventure.
Now, we cater a lot for people who are into independent travel, which is fine. But I think one of the things that strikes me about the kinds of holidays you're offering here, if I was to do this on my own, you know, the amount of research I would have to do, I wouldn't be able to replicate that. So if you're wanting to cram as much in and get as much value from the tuition you're going to have, an organised trip like this is worth its weight in gold, I guess.
I certainly think so. And, you know, we do all our research before. All of the courses that I take, I've been on and I've written, and I've been in the hotels and I've met the tribes and I've met the locals where we're going, so there's no surprises. And most people would look at some of the areas and think, you know, I may not want to go there myself, but when you're with a little group or a buddy, we kind of work off each other and feed off each other, and it lets us go to places that we wouldn't normally go to, and we end up getting some amazing pictures through that.
Yeah, you certainly do, looking at these here. And give me an idea of the price. If you were going off on an Indian trip, maybe for a couple of weeks, what are we talking about?
Well, our prices start at £800 and go up to £2,000. A typical price is around £1,200. Our Kolkata course is £1,295. And that includes the week's tuition, and all your internal travel. So we hire minibuses or jeeps to take people around. So we're delivering ourselves to the location we want to photograph rather than...
And I have to sort out my own travel to get out there.
Absolutely not at all, no. We do all that for you so that...
So that's actually, that's actually really good value for money. Those are quite decent prices, I think.
You. Yeah, we think so. You have to add your hotel fee on top and your food, but... we stay at a homestay in India, and so this is a lady's house, and it costs around £20 to £25 per night per person, and then a whole £3.50 additional for your meal in the evening. And she comes to us in the morning and says, "Do you want fish or lamb or what curry do you want?" And she cooks it in a day and has ready for us the most fabulous curry in the evening when we get back.
Sounds fantastic. No, I mean, I have to say, it's not just flattery, just wandering around. There's a number of photographic holiday companies around, but this one really catches the eye. And Travel Photography Adventures, Google them, have a look at them, because everything will be on the website, no doubt. But some of the images here are stunning, and they're out of the way. They're not the usual kind of chocolate box images at all, are they? They're fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks very much, and have a good show.
Thank you, Andy.
Cheers.
This podcast is brought to you by backpackinglight.co.uk, offering a select range of products for the lightweight outdoors enthusiast. See the full range, along with a wealth of free outdoor hints, tips and videos at backpackinglight.co.uk.
It was a noticeable reflection on current times that the central demonstration models for each brand were displaying much less flesh this year. Around the show, we had model trains, colourful fruit displays, and costumes aplenty. On the Fuji stand, there were many photographers pointing the extensive demonstration equipment at a very well made up and patient Perseus and Andromeda. Andreas Georgiadis is the marketing manager for Fujifilm.
So the three models that we're going to talk about is the X-T20, the X-T2 and the X-H1.
Okay, so starting with the X-T20 then, could you give me an overview of the sort of features that would be of interest to my outdoors listeners?
So the first thing about the X-T20 is that it's the smallest and lightest interchangeable lens cameras that we do. It has a central viewfinder, so it looks like an old-fashioned SLR. And probably the point of difference from our cameras of anyone else is all the functions that you need photographically are on dials, knobs, switches. So when wearing gloves and things like that, it's a lot easier to control. The actual screen tilts as well, so you can shoot very, very low or high up and not have to worry about how you position yourself. But very, very small, very compact, very lightweight, perfect for going out, travelling, walking, outdoors.
So when you say the screen tilts, does it flip out completely? Can you see yourself?
It doesn't flip out completely to be back on yourself. It flips down and it flips the other way, so you can shoot low or you can shoot high, but you're always behind the camera sort of thing.
Okay. Now, what sort of megapixels are we talking about with this?
So all three cameras have the same 24 megapixel APS-C X-Trans CMOS sensor. And from our point of view, it isn't about the image quality that decides how much you need to spend. It's about ancillary features like, does it need to be weather sealed? Do you need two SD slots? Do you need inbuilt stabilization and things like that? And that determines what becomes the right camera for people.
Okay, so it's quite interesting that the quality of the imagery is one thing, but actually the features are the ones that make the difference. The imagery stays the same all the way through.
Yeah, so when we speak to customers, we ask them what is it that they're looking for in terms of what functionality the camera can do, because the image quality shouldn't be the deciding factor. From our point of view, we use the same sensor and processor, so an X-T20 will give a very, very similar, if not identical, image to our flagship XH1 and the XT2. So it's how else the camera feels, what other functionality they want it to have, that becomes a determining factor.
I certainly know from a lot of photographers I'm talking to, the Fuji range is gaining ground very, very rapidly now, and I can see why. So coming back to the three cameras and the reasons we're sort of here talking to you. So the XT20 then, can you just run through the video features and any external sockets and the weatherproofing?
So the XT20 video functionality, it has 4K shooting capabilities, but it sits at the entry of our range, so it doesn't have a lot of video functionality. It's got on the side the microphone socket, but it doesn't have a headphone socket, for example. It's not a weather-sealed camera. For a weather-sealed camera, we jump up to something like the XT2, and that sort of like starts adding to the base of the XT20. So as we already said, image quality is the same. You have a weather-sealed body, though. You then have the facility to add a grip, and that grip provides you longer 4K recording times, and a headphone socket, as well as the microphone socket on the actual camera itself, two SD card slots. The screen will tilt three ways, not two ways, and so like other things that you'd expect from a jump up in price.
And on all three cameras then, coming to the HDMI feed, are they all clean outs?
So XT2 and XH1 are clean outs. The XT20 isn't designed to be a video style camera, so it's not a clean HDMI out.
The other thing that obviously people are concerned about is power when remote for several days at a time. So how do your batteries perform, and is there option to charge the camera from USB?
So all three cameras we're touching upon actually charge via micro USB. It doesn't look it, but when you open up the side port, there's a USB 3 slot on the XT2 and the XH1, and you actually just put a micro USB in one of those slots, and that's how you charge the battery in camera.
Okay, fantastic. Now, obviously, the Fuji range has got a complete range of lenses to go to go with these, and they in themselves, I'm sure, have got features which are applicable to these products.
Yeah, so different lenses, different for different focal lengths and things like that. Ultimately, you might want a small compact prime to go with a small XT2. A small XT20, or you might want something that's weather sealed as well, so you go for like a bigger zoom lens or things like that. But it all determines on how much weight you want to carry. Ultimately, a mirrorless camera is smaller and lighter than a DSLR, but if you're going to then carry 20 lenses, then it's going to be a heavy bag as well. So it is about making sure that we've got the right lenses for the right applications that people want to use it in.
You didn't actually mention the battery life. Is there a sort of a way you judge the battery life across all cameras in a standard camera without the grip?
There is a quoted battery life, which tends to be about 350 shots, and that's done by a governing body that's in Japan, and they quote the 350 shot battery life. But that's done with flash and this and that, and what we actually find is real world usage is much, much higher than that 350 shot battery life.
And from your experience, obviously you've been doing this for a while now, and you've seen this range come in and it starts to, as I say, take the marketplace by storm, and in particular I know a lot of outdoor people that are buying Fuji. Is there a rule of thumb, or is there an example of the type of customers that you're getting across the board? Are there generally more interest to outdoors people, or is it fine art, or what?
As we touched upon earlier, the actual deciding factor is the actual requirement. So we get a lot of people buying into something like the XT2 for their outdoor use because it is weather sealed and things like that. But our cameras aren't suited to just one genre, so you could just as comfortable shooting a landscape as you are in a studio. And the photographs that we've got on our stand at the photography show reflect that wide variety of genres that people are shooting with the camera.
Yeah, I have to say they're all superb. So let's get back to the basics then. The three products, look at the price range, the price point across all three. Without the lens, we're talking about the body only, because obviously they come as, the lens are separate, but there are kits available as well.
So the XT20 starts life at £799 for the body only. You jump up to about £1,400 for the XT2, and what you're getting for that is dual SD slots, you're getting the functionality to add a grip, weather sealing, a brighter viewfinder, a larger resolution viewfinder, you're getting a three-axis tilt screen, etc., etc. When then you jump up even further to our XH1, which is the latest camera, and what you're adding is even greater magnification, a greater resolution on the actual viewfinder. You're adding inbuilt stabilization. You're actually adding sort of like, it's a tougher body itself, so it can take a bit more of a pounding. But overall, they all start life as the basic 24 megapixel sensor and it's processor pro. And just to wrap up, the XH1 retails for about £1,700 body only.
Okay. Are there any other additional Bluetooth or Wi-Fi features that are relevant to these three cameras that would be of interest to my listeners?
Yeah, so all cameras have got Wi-Fi functionality. So you could use a smartphone app to actually use that to take pictures and sort of like if you were wanting to see yourself and take a selfie and things like that. The XH1 adds Bluetooth functionality, and what that gives you is the ability to pair easier because it skips a couple of steps because it's already constantly paired via low power, and then transmit your images via Wi-Fi.
So you can send quality images back to your phone for Instagram.
Correct.
Or what, social
yeah.
media. And then finally, there are kits available with certain of these models. Could you just give me an idea of those?
Yeah, so because we know that some people want to buy it just body only, but they also want a full starter kit. So something like the X-T20 comes with an 18-55 lens, and then you're paying £1,049 for the kit lens, which is an 18-55, so it gives you a 28-80 in old money. Or an X-T2 comes in at £1,649 with that same 18-55 kit lens.
So here I am on the stand of Lumo Power, who are promoting what they call a light meter for the future. Now, no matter how clever cameras get, getting your exposure right is still right for all kind of ways. So I'm with Marco here. So Marco, tell me a bit about this light meter.
It's a really tiny device which can attach to your iPhone and transforms it into a professional color temperature, flash, ambient exposure or illuminance meter.
So it looks like one of those diffuse light adapters, and it just plugs into the lightning port at the bottom of an iPhone.
Yeah, you plug it in, you open the app. The app recognizes the hardware instantly and you are able to see all the available modes. The hardware itself has two measuring sites with two different sensors. Flat sensor, on a flat side, we are measuring color temperature and illuminance. And on a dome side, we are measuring flash and ambient exposure. It's basically just you tap on it, and we are now measuring Kelvins and green versus magenta shift for color temperature. And if I want, for instance, to measure photo flash, I select it. You see the dome side is measuring right now. I can turn it around as well. And we're waiting for the flash at the moment. That's the measurement. You get the aperture, shutter speed, ISO.
Cool.
Yeah. You also get flash versus ambient ratio. And the app shows you the light output out of the flash as well with the effective duration time. So if you want to freeze the motion to shoot water droplets, for instance, this info is useful for you.
So you've got all bases covered here, from exposure to color temperature. You're looking at still photography, video as well. And that the meter itself is pretty light, isn't it? How heavy is that? It's just a couple of grams, I would have thought. It's not very heavy at all.
150 grams is the whole packet.
So for somebody looking to go out into the outdoors, looking to minimize the amount of weight they're carrying with you, that's a genuinely useful activity.
That's why people buy it a lot, and also because it's the only hardware which can do all of these things together. But from my point of view, the most important thing is that we have an app. We have almost 10,000 users, which send us lots of feedback, and we iterate and publish new app updates every 2 weeks. So it's a live thing. It only grows in terms of functionality. So, and our main goal or metrics is to have an operating manual as short as possible, which means the software needs to be easy to use.
And how much are we talking? How much is the cost? How much are we talking about?
It's the regular price in pounds is £215. We're here at the show selling it for £190. Yeah.
Great. So that's a genuinely useful and innovative project. I should say the readout is very, very clear. You're not going to have any problems misunderstanding the readings there. Very generally interesting, useful piece of kit that I'm sure will interest a lot of photographers, because, you know, that calculating the correct exposure is still very important even in these days of digital.
Yes, it is, especially if you're working in video or, I don't know, product photography or something like that. Yeah, it might be useful.
Okay, well, thanks, guys, and good luck with the show.
The same to you. Thank you.
Thanks once again to everyone who took part in this podcast. Tim Carter from Nikon, Mark Seymour from Travel Photography Adventurous, Andreas Georgiadis from Fujifilm, and Marco from Lumo Power, plus Mr. Andy Howell. All the links and further information can be found over on theoutdoorstation.co.uk. The next podcast will be the last from the photography show at the NEC. So until then, bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear or see more from our extensive free library, please visit theoutdoorstation.co.uk.